Parshiyot that has all of the Moadim. And Mor is the first, and Tilchos is the second, and Re'eh is the third. In Parshas Amor, you have the Suri Malacha I mentioned regarding each Yontif. In Parshas Pinchas, you have the Musafim. And in Parshas Re'eh, you have the Mitzvahs Pratiyot. You have the Ria and Chagige, and the other particular Mitzvahs. In the Gemara, in the end of Megillah, the Gemara establishes the Mishnah, the Tanoim and Amoraim establish a dinim that we usually lain Shorah Kesev is from Parshas Emor, so we usually lain at the first days of Yontif. And then Kol HaPchor is in Parshas Re'eh, we usually lain at on the last days of Yontif. So why did the Tanoim decide that this should be, because you always have to lain Main Yonah Diyoma. So why did they choose to have Parshas Shorah Kesev and Parshas Emor we lain at the beginning of the first days Pesach and the first days Sukkot, and Kol HaPchor we lay in the last days of Pesach and the last days of Sukkot? They could have done the reverse. Rav Soloveitchik once suggested that in Parshas Emor it has about the Yisuri Malacha. So if you're going to wait till the last days of Pesach to lay about the Yisuri Malacha, the people will find out the good news that they just violated Malacha on the first day. So you got to notify the tzibur right away. But it's in Parshas Re'eh, lain about the Riyah and the Chagigah, so that is a din of Tashlumin. So even if you'll lain it the last day, and they'll wake up and they'll realize that they didn't bring the Karbonis on the first days of Yontif, so they can always bring Tashlumin later. There is a discussion in the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the first parak of Rosh Hashanah, a sugya of Megillas Tainis. And the way the Pri Chodosh learns the Pshat and the Gemara, the Chasam Soif and his Tshuva quotes this Pri Chodosh. The way the Pri Chodosh understands the Pshat and the Gemara, there is an issue of Bal Tosef if you want to establish additional Yomim Tovim. Let's say the rabbis want to institute a new Yomtos. So we have a list of Yomim Tovim in the Chumash. You have Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and that's it. You don't have additional Yomim Tovim. So there should be a problem of Baltosis. So if you have a community has a celebration, or a family has a celebration, they celebrate a wedding anniversary, they celebrate a birthday, or as one of the children was sick when he was born, and then he had surgery and he was Nitzal, and the family celebrates every year in commemoration of that Yeshua. So that says, the Magen Avraham quotes the Tshuva from the Maharam al-Shakar, that's not a problem of Baltosis. Why not? So he doesn't explain. So the Chayyadam and the Malbim both explain. Chayyadam is in Hilchas Purim, where he says that his house burned down and they almost got killed, and then they every year they would celebrate in commemoration of the Yeshua, and then he prints in the Chayyadam a poem that he used to recite on the occasion. Al Kosi Ayi Nishti Gidi Nashira Zamar Lakei HaMoshi, something like that. And the same other Gedolim. Rav Soloveitchik said that he remembered as a child somehow they're descendants of the Tosfos Yontif. I think that's what he said. Somehow they're descendants of the Tosfos Yontif, and the Tosfos Yontif also had a Sreifa in his home. He was also Nitzal, so he remembers participating in an annual Sudas Hagoya. Tosfos Yontif died a long time earlier. He lived in the 1700s, but still they used to celebrate, all of his descendants celebrated later. So the Chayyadam writes, and the Malbim writes in his commentary on Megillas Esther, that doesn't pose a problem of Bal Tosef, because the Yontif is celebrated by the Jews all over the world. If this celebration, the wedding anniversary, or the birthday party, or the Sudas Hoidoya, or commemoration, or whatever, this is only celebrated by a local community, or by a family, or by a small group of people, that doesn't pose a problem. But if you want to institute a Yontif that's going to be observed by the Jews all over the world, that is an issue of Bal Tosef. Now, what exactly is an issue of Bal Tosef? So take, for example, Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer we observe by deleting Tachnun. So this doesn't get the Chasam Sofer excited. He's not upset about that. Apparently, we assume there is a machlokes regarding the nature of reciting Tachnun. The Rambam seems to say pretty clearly in Hilchas Tfila that Tachnun is a chovah. You're obligated to say Tachnun whenever you're supposed to say. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, you don't say Tachnun. By Ma'ariv, you don't say Tachnun, but on Shacharis and Mincha, on a weekday, you're obligated to say Tachnun. This is basically not the accepted opinion. And Shulchan Aruch, we accept the view of the Gaonim, which is quoted by the Torah, that Tachnun is basically a Rishut. Our practice is that we say it, but it's a minik. It's recommended, it's a recommendation, but it's not really a chiv. So if you're going to delete the Tachnun, the world doesn't come to an end. So the fact that we delete the Tachnun on Tu B'Shvat, on Tu B'Yov, on Lag B'Omer, on the Rebbe's yard site, whenever people delete the Tachnun, so the Chassam Sofer doesn't get so upset about that. That's not called that you're observing a new Yontif. You let that Tachnun because it's a happy occasion. That's not so bad. But he heard, the Chassam Sofer writes that he heard that in Eretz Yisrael, the city may roam, they dance and they give haircut to the children, they make a big parade or whatever, they make a big fuss on Lag B'Omer. So he thinks that that poses a problem, and he writes, if they would listen to me, I would do away with this form of celebrating Lag B'Omer, because according to this Pichadosh that he quotes from Aruch Chaim, this constitutes a violation of Baal Taisa, because Lag B'Omer has nothing to do with the Klolim of Megillas Taisa. You only have a right to institute a new Yontif that's going to be observed by the Jews all over. You see, that's the shadow. What Lag B'Omer is only observed by the people in Meirom, but Lag B'Omer is observed all over the world. It's not just a local. That celebration is local, but the holiday Lag B'Omer is observed all over the world. So that's why he thinks that there is a problem, because the people in Meirom, who have the big parade and the big hullabaloo, they're latching on to everybody else, so they're making Lag B'Omer into a yontif. So he considers this a problem of Baal Taisa. When is there not a problem of Baal Taisa? What are the rules and regulations of Megillas Taisa? So the Gemara learns that from a pasuk in Zechariah. Chagas Chai Malachi were the three Nevi'im who were there at the beginning of the period of the Bai Sheni. The Gemara in the first parak in Yuma quotes the pasuk in Shir HaShirim that Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the first Beis HaMikdash, he already knew that it was Osid Lehechorez. This they already knew from the days of the Chet HaMeraglim. It was ready Nikva. The Meraglim came back. The Chet HaMeraglim was on Tisha B'Av, and it was Nigzar on that Tisha B'Av, Yifkom B'Layla Ha'hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Kaveya, Tisha B'Av is a Yom B'Chiyah L'Deres. And the Chumash is not that explicit, but it's explicit in the Navi Yecheskel and in Tehillim. It says that when the Meraglim came back, HaKadosh Baruch already swore that he's going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. He's going to send the Jews into Golus. The Netziv in his commentary on Chumash shows where it says in the Chumash, "Imalich Vodi is Kol Haaretz." He says that's the pshat and not pasuk. That Kadosh Baruch Hu said he's going to scatter the Jews. He's going to make a churban hamadin. He's going to scatter the Jews all over the world. "Imalich Vodi is Kol Haaretz." But leaving out the pasuk in Chumash, it says in Yecheskel and it says in Tehillim like that, that on the occasion of the Chet HaMeraglim, Kadosh Baruch Hu already told them the punishment is going to be churban Beis HaMikdash. So when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, he already knew from day number one that it was Asid Lehechoret. And then he said the Baruch HaKodesh, and he wrote this in Shir HaShirim, what's going to be with the second Beis HaMikdash? Will that be the ultimate Beis HaMikdash? Will that be destroyed? So he said, "Imchoyma hi nivna lehatiras kesef, imdelasi lot notzer alehalu achores." So the Gemara in the first parak in Yuma quotes a tradition that pshat in the pasuk is as follows: when the Golus Babel will be up and the Jews will return to Eretz Yisrael under as in Nechemi im choma hi miyalo kachoma, if everybody will come back, there'll be big masses coming back. Nivna lehatiras kesef, then the second Beis Hamikdash, the period of the second Beis Hamikdash and the second Beis Hamikdash will be like a tiras kesef, like a metal structure. Ein arekav sholed, but metal doesn't rot. So he said, if everybody will return from Golus Babel, second Beis HaMikdash will not rot, it will not be destroyed. And Ein HaRekav Sholebo also implies that there will be Nevuah, there will be Ruach HaKodesh and there will be Nevuah. However, in Delasi, Natsu Alalu Acharez means that if hardly anybody shows up, and that was the case, hardly anybody showed up on the Ezra Nehemiah, then Natsu Alalu Acharez, then the second Beis HaMikdash will be like a wooden hut, like a wooden bungalow. Sha'arekiv shalad bo, and the Gemara seems to understand this in two levels. Number one, harekiv shalad bo, the Beis HaMikdash will be doomed to destruction. Second, Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, it'll rot away. And secondly, that they won't have any Nevi'im and they won't have any Ruach HaKodesh. So the Gemara says that really the Rabbanu Shalom was angry at the Jewish people because hardly anybody showed up when they came back to Yeshiva Tzion. and he didn't want to send any more Nevi'im, but he made an exception to the rule. He sent Chagas Chaim Alacha because he wanted to build the Beis. He wanted them to build the Beis Hamikdash, and the Alacha says he can't build the Beis Hamikdash without authorization of a Navi. That's based on the pasuk B'shich Nesidrushu, and the Sifrei says on that pasuk comments on the pasuk Drosh Al Pi Navi. That was Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, was a student of Rabbi Kiveger, middle 1800s, and he had a fantastic idea. We should go rebuild the Beis Hamikdash and bring korbanos. And he thought that he solved all the problems about Kohanim and Big Dekun and Mokim HaMizbeach and Tuma and Machzal Shekel. He thought he solved all the problems. And he sent this to all the Rabbanim in his generation. Rabbi Kiveger agreed, Nachum Sofer agreed, everybody was all gung-ho. The Arabs didn't agree that he was never in Eretz Yisrael, so he didn't realize that Tzvi Hirsch didn't realize that there's a mosque and there's nothing to discuss. They won't let you do it. The Chassam Sofer knew that there was a mosque. Rabbi Kiveger wanted the Chassam Sofer was originally from Frankfurt, so he had a connection with the Rothschild family. The Rothschilds were big bankers; they were wealthy people. They were lending money to everybody in the world. So Rabbi Kiveger was the father-in-law of the Chassam Sofer, so he sent a letter to the Chassam Sofer that he should contact the Rothschild, the big banker, and Rothschild should impress upon the chief mufti in Yerushalayim that they should allow the Jews to go on the Har Bais and bring Korban Pesach. So Chassam Sofer wrote him back a letter, with all due respect, my dear father-in-law, what are you off your mind? The mufti wouldn't let a Jew walk anywhere near the Makom HaMikdash. He's going to give permission to bring Korban Pesach. There's nothing to, no one to talk to. There's nothing to negotiate about. So the whole dream of Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was that this Adovah Shalom Baliyom was that Beit Shalom Nolda. The whole thing was just ridiculous. There was nothing to discuss. But the Rabbanim in Europe didn't know that. They were never in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't realize that there's nothing to discuss at that time. So they were discussing theoretically. So Rabbi Yankov Etzlinger sent a letter to Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Rabbi Yankov Etzlinger is the author of the Aruch Laner and the author of the collection of tshuvas that's known as Binyan Sion, because the first two tshuvas was sent to Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer about the possibility of Binyan Beis HaMikdash. The tshuvas are out of order. It doesn't go in the order of Aruch Chaim, Yerideh, Ebenezer. It doesn't go in the order of Shas, just totally haphazard. Maybe the most important tshuva comes first, Eretz Yisrael, okay. Maybe alphabetically arranged, Eretz Yisrael starts with an Aleph. I don't know, totally out of order. So the first tshuva to Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer about the possibility of building Beis HaMikdash, he said, you forgot one major point. The Sheikh Nasir Sheikh Rosh Al Pi Navi, we don't have any Navi. How can you build a Beis HaMikdash without authorization of a Navi? That's where Abelbala Soloveitchik also felt like that, and many others in between Abyanke Vetlik and Abelbala Soloveitchik also felt like that. That even if one should assume that Kitcha Lasi Lover, that the Mokam HaMikdash retains its Kedusha, the Rama's opinion is that the Mokam HaMikdash retained its Kedusha from the days of Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, even though it was destroyed later, it retained the Kedushin. Still, when they built the Beis Sheni, the Gemara says, Gimel Nevi'im Alu Yimai Mi Babel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to send the three Nevi'im to authorize Bnei Yisrael to build the Beis HaMikdash because of this halacha. But if you don't have Nevi'im supervising the building, so you're not allowed to build, even though it is Kitcha Lo Zilala. Just for the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, you need the name. So I'll call upon him, that's what the Gemara says. Although the Rebbe Shlomo was angry at Bnei Yisrael and he decided he's not going to send any more Nevi'im until Eliyahu HaNavi, that's going to be the next Navi announcing the coming of Mashiach, that's how Malachi signs off. Malachi is the last of these three. Chagas Chai Malachi. So Malachi signs off, Hinei Nefesh Alech Lechem Es Eliyahu HaNavi, Bifnei Bo Yom HaShem Agor Lanur. So the Malbim explains that Malachi knew he was the last Navi. There's going to be a long gap until Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come. And he tells the people they better listen to the laws of the Torah because there aren't going to be any Nevi'im to give them any Musa. The Gemara seems to say just to build the Mizbeach also needs a Navi. The three Nevi'im, one of them authorized them how to build the Mizbeach. Yeah. So it would appear that for that you also need a Navi. That's what it seems like. So these were the three Nevi'im, Chagas Chaim Malachi were the three Nevi'im, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to send, and not, even though he's angry at Bnei Yisrael, he said he's not going to send any more Nevi'im. But he had to send the Nevi'im in order that they should be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. So one of the shaylos that they asked the Navi Zechariah was, should we continue to observe Tisha B'Av and Asara B'Tavis and so on, as we have been observing for the last 70 years? Ha'efke b'chodesh ha'chamishi hi nozer, should I still cry? And the Chodesh HaMishi is the month of Av. Should I still cry on Tisha B'Av as we have been crying for the last 70 years? They had a minute. that when they built the base on the second base on Mikdash, the Yester Shadah should we still continue to observe Tisha B'Av? Mechetei said, why should they still observe Tisha B'Av if they have a base on Mikdash? The answer is because they realized that there were so many things missing in the base on Mikdash. It was very shvach, it didn't compare to the first base on Mikdash. They thought maybe we still have to observe Avelos over the Churban base on Mikdash. So the Navi Zechariah gave them an answer, and he says that sometimes you have to have fast days, and sometimes you have to have Yamin Tovim, and it's an obscure answer, exactly what he said, and the Gemara gives the whole interpretation. So the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah comments on that pasuk, that from that pasuk you see, from Zechariah you see that sometimes there isn't a violation of Baal Tovim, so sometimes you have a right to establish additional Yamin Tovim, and the criterion is if the commemoration has to do with something about the building of the Beis HaMikdash. If you're celebrating the building of the Beis HaMikdash, or you're celebrating the anniversary of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, something in commemoration with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, so that's acceptable. Why should that be the exception to the rule? Why is that allowed to celebrate? If you just celebrate, you get all the Jews in the world to celebrate my wedding anniversary. So that'll be Baal Tovim. Why only Beis HaMikdash, celebrating Binyan Beis HaMikdash? So the sum of the answer is to be found in the Ramban, Achumash, and Parshas Naso, as well as the Ramban, the Sefer HaMitzvahs. When the Ramban lists off what he considers are the 613 mitzvahs, and the Ramban disagrees here and there, he deletes some of them and he has to replace them with other mitzvahs in order to be mashlim the minyan of Taryag. So the Ramban writes that in his opinion, one of the mitzvahs HaTorah is that whenever you build a Beis HaMikdash, you have to celebrate. We haven't built so many Bat HaMikdashim. So in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they built the Mishkan, then they built Mishkan Shilah, then they built the Bais Rishon, then they built the Bais Sheni, Lasi Lava, they built the Bais HaShlishi. So it says when they built Bais Rishon, when they built the Mishkan, it says in Chumash, there was a lot of celebration. The Shivas Me'am Iluim, and the Yud Beis Yimei HaNasim, Chanukas HaNasim. When they built the Mishkan Shilah, it doesn't say in Tanakh. When they built the Bais Rishon, it says that they celebrated, people came from all over. When they built Bais Sheni, it also says that they celebrated 3 weeks. It says in Tanakh they celebrated for 3 weeks. When they built the Bais HaShlishi, it says in Yechezkel that they'll be celebrating for over 6 months. There'll be special celebrations. Probably when they built Mishkan Shilah, they also celebrated. Some of the Poskim say whenever you build a Bais HaKnesses or a Bais HaMedrash, which has the status of a Mikdash Miyat, and some Rishonim hold that that's a Din Deraisa, that a Bais HaKnesses and a Bais HaMedrash is referred to by the Novi Yechezkel as a Mikdash Miyat, so some say that's also included in this mitzvah of the Ramban. That whenever you build a shul or you build a yeshiva, you have to celebrate in some form or another. Which chazan should sing, and which rabbi should hold a drush, and who should say a shir, and how many days the celebration should be, and so on. The details are not necessarily part of the mitzvah. Like the Ramban writes, how many karbonas you have to bring, how many days you bring karbonas, that's already harua shor. But in principle, that you have to celebrate, that's a real din deraisa. Right. So the details are already, that's how Rosh Hashanah you have to figure out. But in every generation it was different. But in principle, that you have to celebrate. So that seems to be the basis of this pasuk in Yechezkel, and the pasuk in Zechariah, that the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah quotes on Daf Yetzes. Samar Viva, Samar Hamisha, Yitzon, Samar Asira, Yir Lososan, Simcha Lebeis Yisrael. Yir Lososan, Simcha means that we're going to celebrate them as Yamin Tovim. And the Gemara says, Vahani Kihani. The Gemara says there's a parallelism over here. That the observance of Tisha B'Av and Asar B'Tavis and some Gedal, etc. is an observance of Avelos of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So Vahani Kihani, the celebration of the Yamin Tovim, Yir Lososan, the Simcha. The Beis Yisrael, when do you add an additional Yamin Tovim when it has something to do with the Beis HaMikdash? Either they actually built the Beis HaMikdash, or we're celebrating in commemoration on the anniversary of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, but the Megillah's Tainus, they had during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, they had many, many Yamin Tovim. Not all of them, they didn't build the Beis HaMikdash every day. Every week they had another Yom Tov. So if you look through the Megillah Sinus, the Gemara understands that all of those holidays had to do with improving the structure of the Bais Sheni, improving the functioning of the Bais Sheni, improving the Hakrovas HaKarbonos, improving the institution of the Kohen Gedoyla, which is an institution of the Beis HaMikdash, or improving the institution of the Sanhedrin, which is also supposed to meet in the Beis HaMikdash. All the Yamim Tovim and Megillas Tainus revolved about the Beis HaMikdash. That's how the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah. Some of them are not so well understood. What do they have to do with the Beis HaMikdash? But that's what the Gemara seems to say, that that's the aside of the Megillas Tainus. If the government made a Gzeira Ro against the Jewish people, and then the Jews prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Gzeira was broken, and it has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash unless they davened in the Beis HaMikdash and they broke the Gzeira. So then we can celebrate over the success of the Tefillah in the Beis HaMikdash. Basically, Tefillah Yikari L'Chalo Amin. Beis HaMikdash is a Makam Tefillah, it's a Makam Torah, that houses the Luchas, it houses the Sanhedrin, which is the Yisoid of Torah Shebaal Peh. So in order to establish a Yom Tov, the thing that you're celebrating, the thing that you're commemorating, has to have something to do with the institution of the Beis HaMikdash. Whenever it has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash, then you have no right to make a new Yom Tov. That's how the Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. So that's why the Shagas Aryeh and the Sefer Turi Eben on Rosh Hashanah and the Sfasemes and the Nesivis and others pose the question that according to the Gemara's tradition, the story of Purim, the Nes Purim, occurred during the period of the Golus Babel. It occurred before the building of the Bais Sheni. So how did the Chachamim have the right in the first place to celebrate Purim if it had nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash? So the answer that they give is that the Chachamim in that generation, in the generation, those who experienced the Nes Purim felt that this was going to be an Askalta de Geula. They keep on interviewing different Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael in the newspapers about Askalta de Geula. So all the people from Merkaz Arab, they're all gung-ho about this Askalta de Geula. And all the others say, where did they get this from? This baloney. What kind of Askalta de Geula? The Gemara has something about Askalta de Geula, but in the Gemara it's not, the Gemara doesn't say it in a, that it's a halachic concept. Talks about Mohammeds, they're going to be Mohammeds in the future, the Mohammeds are going to be the Askalta de Geula. But so many think, why do we have to get involved in this Askalta de Geula issue? So the Poskim say not so. Major Poskim say that Askalta de Geula is a halachic concept. So here, that's what the Nesivis and other Poskim say. The reason why the Chachamim felt that they had the right to establish a Yom Tov of Purim, even though there was no Beis HaMikdash at that time, and offhand, the Nes Purim had nothing at all to do with any Beis HaMikdash whatsoever, was that it's not true. That it was an Askalta de Geula. What does that mean, Askalta de Geula? Well, you have to know what Geula is. What's the end? If you know what the end is, then you know what the beginning. To be able to determine what the beginning is, what is the definition of Geula? So if you look in the Ramban HaChumash, in the introduction to the Chumash Shmos, his commentary to Shmos, he writes that the Sefer Shmos is a Sefer that deals with the Golus of Rishona and the Geula therefrom. So the Golus of Rishona was Golus Mitzrayim. The Jews left the Eretz Yisrael. And they went to Mitzrayim. And the Geula was when you get to the end of Chumash Mos. So the Ramban asks himself, but it's not true. The Geula wasn't until Yeshua ben Nun returned back to Eretz Yisrael. And when you finished all Chamisha Chumshatar, you still didn't. Moshe Rabbeinu died at the end. They still didn't return back to Eretz Yisrael. So the Geula didn't happen yet. So the Ramban says, not true. The Geula appears in the end of Chumash Mos with the building of the Mishkan. You have Tumat Tetzav of Ayakal Pekudei, four long sedras about the building of the Mishkan. That is the Geula. Why in the world is that the Geula? So the Ramban explains that the Golus means that originally we had Soda Laka Aleha Halehem, that the Jewish people had Ashras Ashchina when they lived in Eretz Yisrael. That expression, Soda Laka Aleha Halehem, is a phrase that comes from the Sefer Iyov. And the Ramban quotes, there are Midrashim, Bereshis Rabbah, where they have a recurring theme, Ha'ovis hein hein ha-merkovet, that Avraham and Yitzchak and Yankit, the Ovis, they had Ashuas Ashchina on themselves. So that's called Yisrael Yoshim Alad Mosam. If the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael, and they're secular Jews, so that's not called living. You're living in Eretz Yisrael, okay, but that's not called really the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael Bishlei Musa means when you have Soda Laka Alei Ohaleihem. And the Golus is when they. When they lost that, when they went to Golus Mitzrayim, so they lost that Zechiah. And when they built the Mishkan, even though they were still in the Midbar, they didn't return back to Eretz Yisrael. They were still in Golus, but that's considered already a Geula. That's a Ramban says. The Geula was the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you establish that definition, that Geula means building of the Beis HaMikdash, and you restore it back to the state of Soda Laka Aleha Halehem, so then you can try to figure out what's an Askalta the Geula. So the... the Nesivis and the Sfasemis and others say that the reason why the Chachamim had the right, they felt they had the right to establish the Yontif of Purim, even though there was no Beis HaMikdash, was because they felt that the Nes Purim was somehow or another going to lead up to the building of the Bais Sheni. So therefore that was an Aschal to the Gula. The Chasam Sefer wrote a diary, kept a diary, which is available, it's printed. Somebody got his diary and it was printed. Fascinating reading. So at one point in his diary he writes that there was a war going on, some Prussian-Austrian war or something, and he was in Pressburg and they were in the middle of the war and the city was under siege. So they were discussing the possibility of being goyim of tainis and praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the war should end. A reasonable request, a reasonable havamina. So the Chasam Sofer writes in his diary that he didn't permit them to do that, because the Gemara tells us in the Gila that Muhammad are a scout of the Gula, and he understood that to mean that all wars in the world, the Prussian-Austrian war that he lived through in the 1800s, was an Aschalta de Gula. How in the world that's Aschalta de Gula problematic? So he thought that all the worlds are Aschalta de Gula. And Aschalta de Gula is a halachic concept. It's relevant to us, Nagel Lalocha, not Stam, a Kabbalistic concept. The Seidus, the mystery of the way the Rebbe Shalom runs his world. No, it's Nagel Lalocha. Namely, we're not allowed to reverse this process. If the Rebbe Shalom brought about a war in the world, that's going to bring the Geula. So if I'm going to pray to the Rebbe Shalom to stop the war, that means that I'm halting the process from continuing. You have to let the process of Geula unfold itself.
When you say halt the Geula, is that for just the final Geula of everything that is to it, the way it should be, or any amount of Geula,
The Ramban thinks that the Geula was when they built the Beis HaMikdash. He says the Yetzias Mitzrayim is an Aschal to the Geula. He thinks the Yetzias Mitzrayim was only a Haskala that was going to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He thinks the Geula is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Right.
When the people requested to make a Hainis and the Dhamma,
I mean, they should be going to China and pray that we should be nitzal in the war.
Right.
That you can do. But to pray to stop the war, that the Chasam Sofer thinks you're not allowed to. You have to be careful what you're praying for. So the Mincha Saluzer, the Minkacha, quotes this. Mincha Saluzer lived during the period of the First World War. So they also wanted to be going to China and be mispal to the Bashlam to stop the war. So he quotes from the Chasam Sofer's diary that he thinks you're not allowed to pray to stop the war. You have to pray that we should be nitzal in the war, we shouldn't get killed. But you can't pray to stop the war, because he assumes, like the Chasam Sofer assumed, that all wars in the world are an aschal to the Geula, somehow or another. And it's a halachic principle, aschal to the Geula, that you're not allowed to pray to God to slow down the Geula. We have to, if anything, hasten the Geula, but not to try to hold the Rebbe Shalom back from developing the Geula. So this is the question, is this part of the Chasam Sofer here is saying the same as the Nesivos and the same as the Sfasem, same as others? They're all assuming that the Aschal to the Geula is a halachic concept, and as such you have to have halachic criteria to determine what constitutes an Aschal to the Geula. It's not just you rely on all the Mekubalim. Ikvus de Meshicha is a non-halachic concept. We don't have Alpi Pashli, we don't have any dinim that depend on Ikvus de Meshicha. So somehow when the Baal Shem Tov determined that we're living now, Baal Shem Tov lived in the late 1700s. He said we're living in the period of Ikvus Meshicha. Nobody got angry at him. How does he have the right to say that? Rabbi Chanan Wasserman writes we're living in the period of Ikvus Meshicha. Nobody got angry at Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. When you start using the expression Aschal to the Geula, they say, no, you have no right to say that. You have to be a Novi. If anything, the reverse. Who has the right to say whether it's Ikvus Meshicha? That's not a halachic concept. But Aschalt of the Gula here, the Nesivas with the Chsam Sefer, with the Sfasem, these are major halachic authorities. They say Aschalt of the Gula is a halachic concept. So you have to have halachic criteria to determine what's called an Aschalt of the Gula. So what exactly is an Aschalt of the Gula? What's called a Haskom? So the So we mentioned very often, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Kosam and Beis, and the Rama quotes it, La'aloche, and the Mishnah Torah, the Gimel Mitzvah, Nitztava Yisol, Bichnisosim La'oret, the Jewish people became obligated to observe three mitzvahs in a specific order when they moved into Eretz Yisrael. So the first mitzvah is to establish a Jewish government, the second mitzvah is to wipe out the Zecher HaMolech, and the third mitzvah is to build a Beis HaMikdash. And what learns that from Pesukim has to be fulfilled in that order. So if you establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, al pi din, that's an aschalt of the Geula. Now how many centuries is it going to take from the establishment of the Jewish government till the building of Beis HaMikdash? It may take another 20 centuries. What's an afkamina though? But al pi din, that's called an aschalt of the Geula. So as such, if that's an aschalt of the Geula, so the way the Poskim say, the way the Sfasem is, and the way the Nesiva said regarding the establishment of the Yontav of Purim, if you have an aschalt of the Geula, it's permissible to establish a Yontav. It doesn't mean you mechuyif to. I mean, is it permissible to establish a Yom Tov?
Is it Malchus Yisrael or the Jewish government? How do you relate to that?
We don't have a kingdom. We don't have a kingdom. The Pashtus is, it means a government. I'll be Pashtus. The Ramban HaChumash talks about the possibility of having built the Beis HaMikdash in the days of the Shoftim. So the Mefarshim ask on the Ramban. He says the Jewish people were negligent. They should have built the Beis HaMikdash way before, in the days of the Shoftim. So he asked Kakasha, how can you build the Beis HaMikdash in the days of the Shoftim? The Halacha says you have to have first Lahamed Lahamelech, then Lahachri Zara Shalamalek. In the beginning of the Beis Sheni, when they built the Beis Sheni, that was the Haru Ashur. Chagai Hanavi came and he told them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu requests of you, you should build the Beis HaMikdash, even though there was no Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. They were under control of the Goyish government. So that was Ohayru Ashur. But to say that on their own, the Jewish people should have built the Bais Rishon before they had a Melech, they're not Mechuyim. So the Mefarshim say that apparently the Ramban is of the opinion that it doesn't have to be a Melech. They had a Shofet, they had some kind of a loose form of government. It must be. If you have a Jewish government, then Eretz Yisrael, that's good enough. It has to be a Jewish government, though. The Halacha has Al Pidin, there are two different concepts. There's a Malchus Yisrael and there's a Malchus Umas Olam. This is in the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah says, whenever the government was established, if it's a Goyish government, when it comes Echad B'Tishrei, it's considered the next year. When it comes next year, Echad B'Tishrei is considered the third year. Nafkamina, if you write in a document how many years it is since Hakamas HaMedina, so if it's a Goyish government, you don't change it July 4th. You don't keep on changing. On July 3rd, it's so many years, and July 4th, it becomes another year. No. When it comes Echad B'Tishrei, then it's already the second year. It's always, the cutoff point is Echad B'Tishrei. And if it's a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, if it's a Malchus Yisrael, then when it comes Echad B'Nissen, that's the cutoff point. Not Hey Year. People count how many years it is since HaKamas HaMedina up until Hey Year is one day, and then after Hey Year is, they change the number. Al Pidin, that's not correct. If you should consider the government in Eretz Yisrael now as a Malchus Yisrael, and you want to count how many years it is since HaKamas HaMedina, it's already from Rosh Hashanah. Of Teshan Tavshin Samachay, we should count rather from Rosh Chodesh Nissan. If it's a Jewish government, you count from Rosh Chodesh Nissan. That is different. So this is the Ran on the in his commentary on the Rif on the first daf in Rosh Hashanah writes that he thinks that this is, he quotes the Ramban. He thinks that this is a din deraisa. It's not just the minig that they have is mana tanoim, that the cutoff point for Malchus Yisrael is Rosh Chodesh Nissan. The cutoff point for Malchus Umas Olam is Rosh Chodesh Echad B'Tishrei. He thinks that this is learned out from the Pesukim in the Chumash. What does it represent? So the Netziv in his Bir HaChumash explains what it represents, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the whole world in the Sheshes Mebereshes, they didn't only institute principles of physics and chemistry and biology and mathematics and so on, he instituted principles of history. The rise and fall of any given country can be predicted based on the rules and regulations of history. So this is relevant for all non-Jewish history, for all secular history. So when a king is appointed, when a government is appointed, and it comes Echad B'Tishrei is Hayom Haris Olam. That's we're celebrating in commemoration of the Bria Olam. So So that's the beginning of a new year as far as all of history is concerned, because the whole of history is subject to the rules and regulations that were established at the time of Bria Soilim, except for Jewish history. Jewish history is Lamaila Menateva, and the month of that represents Lamaila Menateva is Nisan. The Gemara says Benisan Nigalu, Benisan Asim Leigol. The month of Nisan represents Hanhoga of Lamaila Menateva. So that's why the Netziv in his commentary on Parshas Bo, on that pasuk, Achodesh Zalachem, Rosh Chodeshim, explains why is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, why is Chodesh Nisan the first month in the Jewish calendar? Because the Gemara has a whole sugya in the end of Masechta Shabbos, Ein Mazal Yisrael. What it means is that the history of the development of the history of the Jewish people is not tachas shlita sakachov v'hamazal. It means that it's not subject to the rules and regulations of teva. It's always lemaila min teva. Ramban in his commentary on Chumash considers this one of the ikari ha'amuna. He says whoever doesn't believe in this principle that Jewish history is lemaila min teva, Ein Mazal Yisrael, is lacking in ikari ha'amuna. The Rambam listed off 13 ikari ha'amuna, but they're missing the. There are more than 13. Am Yisrael is the Am HaNitcha. That's also a principle in Amunah. The Rambam left out. That's a question. How did the Rambam decide which 13 ideas he's going to include? He should have included many more. So anyway, so this is one that Ramban adds on. Ramban says a few places in his commentary on Chumash that this is a major principle of faith in our religion. That Ein Mazal Yisrael, the Jewish history is L'mayla Menatev. He says, does it make sense that if you do mitzvahs, it rains, and if you do averis, it doesn't rain? Well, Taras Hashemayim, lo yia motar. And if the Jews violate the laws of Shemitah, the land will be taken away from us. That totally doesn't make any sense. So it's l'mayla min ha-teva. There's no way to explain that al-pi teva. It's l'mayla min ha-teva. So this determination as to whether any government is a malchus, it's all a malchus, it's all a is a halachic issue. It's not some Kabbalah. It's a halachic issue. The way the Ran writes, that's a din deraisa. The Malchus Yisrael, you start counting the years from Rosh Chodesh Nisan and the Malchus from Yisraelim, from Echad B'Tishrei. So if something is halachic, it has to have halachic criteria to be able to determine whether it's a Jewish government or not. Similarly, the Chazon Ish has in his Sefer on Erev, in the end of the first Perek, the Gemara there, the Mishnah there, talks about Abod Dvarim Patru B'Machna, special dinim that apply to the Jewish army. So the Chazon Ish writes, he thinks that it's a double pashut, that it only has the status of a Jewish army if it's sponsored by the Jewish government that's ruling Eretz Yisrael. You have to have if you have a Jewish legion in the British army, a Jewish legion in the French army, that's not called Machne Yisrael. Machne Yisrael means the Jewish army that's sponsored by the Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. So this is Negel Halacha. You only have a din of Melchemes Mitzvah if the government that's sponsoring this army is a Jewish government. So that's the question, whether the government and the present government in Eretz Yisrael is considered the Malchus Yisrael or just a Malchus Umasolim. There is a minority opinion. There are those who feel that it's not a government at all. That it's just a bunch of pirates. So that's hard to believe. I mean, the government in Eretz Yisrael is more dishonest than under the Tsars. The government of the Tsars was recognized as the government. The government in Eretz Yisrael is worse. They're the biggest gazlonim and the biggest cheats and the biggest liars. Worse than the Tsars, hard to believe. So the Pashtus is certainly is a government. It's recognized. If it's not a government, so the coins that they mint and the money that they print is not considered kesef, then it's only considered shavah kesef. They wouldn't be able to be paid the Maaseh Sheni on such money. So that the Turei Kart are consistent. They won't use Israeli coins to be paid the Maaseh Sheni, because they say they're a bunch of pirates. And the Rambam says that if you have a pirate and he mints coins, so that's not called kesef. That's maybe it works. Maybe the money is being used by the people because they're afraid of the pirates. That's called Shavah Kesef. It's only called Kesef. The Pinyin Maaseh Sheni, you have to use Dafke Kesef. You can't use Shavah Kesef. So to say that the Israeli government is just a bunch of pirates, that's very doichet. That's utterly ridiculous. Maybe there are four or five people in the world who think like that. They put in these big advertisements in the newspapers. You think me or there, how many people there are who belong to the Turekai. But that's not a joke. They're bottled be'elah. But the question is, the debated question is, whether the government in Eretz Yisrael is a Malchus Yisrael, or it's just a Malchus. It's just a Malchus. Why should it not be a Malchus Yisrael? Because they're anti-religious. They're anti-religious. No. There were times in Tanakh where the government was much more anti-religious, that they didn't let anybody go to the Beis HaMikdash. They forced everybody to worship Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara in the Rosh Hashanah has discussion. Gemara says that those governments were considered Malchus Yisrael. The one, there was a time in history where there was a Jewish king who was ruling over Eretz Yisrael, and part of his kingdom, part of the years that he was a king, it was considered Malchus Yisrael, and part of the time it was considered Malchus Umas Olam. So the Gemara in the beginning of Rosh Hashanah talks about Artaxasto. He's the king in the beginning of Nehemiah. Nehemiah was the butler in the king's palace, and he served breakfast in bed to the king and to the queen. So this Artaxasto, Rashi in his opening comment on Nehemiah quotes in the Medrash that Artaxasto was Jewish, that his mother was Esther Hamalta and his father was Achashverosh. And they had the son Artaxasto, and he was ruling Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says he was totally not educated Jewishly, had no musuk of what the Jewish religion is all about. But there was a period of time that he was aware of the fact that he was Jewish, and it meant something to him that there's a Jewish king. He was the king over 127 Medinas. He got the Yerusha from the father. Sheva v'yeser v'meah Medina. When the father Achashverosh died, he took over. So Ben Ashar, in the middle of everything, he was happened to be an accident of history, happened to be a Jewish king, ruling, happened to be an accident of history that he was Jewish, and an accident of history, he was the king over Eretz Yisrael also, in the middle of the 127 Medinas. So the Gemara says, as long as it meant something to him, that he's a Jewish king ruling over Eretz Yisrael, then his government had the status of Malchus Yisrael. And as soon as that awareness, as soon as that feeling of his was lost, and just ran the government like neutral. It didn't mean, didn't affect any change whatsoever. Then his government had the status of a Malchus Umas Olam. So let's say if you have a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, and they force everyone to worship Avodah Zarah, but this is a Jewish Avodah Zarah. The other nations of the world don't worship this Avodah Zarah. That's what the Medrash says, the Gemara has like that. That in the days of the Tanakh, the Goyim used to say, oh, that's a Jewish Avodah Zarah. None of the Goyim will worship that. And the perception was all the nations of the world, all the nations in the Middle East, they all recognized the government in Eretz Yisrael as a Jewish government. They were always attacking them. It's a Jewish government. Either worshipping Avodah Zarah, and they're not keeping Shabbos and Kashrus and everything, so what? But the perception was that that was a Jewish country. Why is everybody against Eretz Yisrael now? They had the speaker last night. Why did the United Nations make so many condemnations of Eretz Yisrael? Because it's a Jewish government, obviously. Like that. Why was Russia opposed to Medina itself for so many years? Obviously, it's a Jewish government. What's a Shiloh? The perception of the whole world is that Eretz Yisrael is a Jewish government. So as long as that is the perception, so the Gemara says it, then it has the status of Malchus Yisrael.
In the Zohar, it says that when the time just before Mashiach, that we're going to be under the rule of the Arab Rav. So do we say that the Arab Rav there also has a Jewish status? Are we saying that the Arab Rav is something else? When the Arab Rav was in Mitzrayim, we said they weren't quite Jews. They couldn't enter into Tanakh in Israel. That was a whole incident with Yishun and Tzuru, which is not anymore. And so you can't. Do we say that they have a separate status? Even if they were Jews, that it's not Jewish government, because if we're under the rule of them, they weren't Tanakh in Israel. So
the Machne Yisrael is divided among the Shvatim. So whoever was a Ger, even if it be a Tzadik Gomer, a Ger didn't belong in any of those Shvatim. So they were Michutz LaMachane. They had to have their own Machane. The Arab Rav were all Gerim. They didn't belong to any of the Shvatim. But if you have a government in Eretz Yisrael that's run by an Arab Rav, but it's recognized by all as a Jewish government. In Eretz Yisrael there are laws on the books that if a Jew comes to Eretz Yisrael, he becomes a citizen with a much quicker process than if a non-Jew wants to join to become a citizen. So obviously, the government still recognizes Medinat Yisrael as a Jewish government. They may decide to change those laws, may decide to make everything parva, everything neutral, and there won't be any difference whether you're Jewish or non-Jewish. Then it'll become Malchus Yisrael, so there won't be a Malchus Yisrael. But as long as there are laws on the books, as long as the perception is and the feeling is that it's a Jewish government, then it's a Malchus Yisrael. Will be done when it happens. Chalila. We just hope it doesn't happen. We'll be done when it happens. We'll have to judge then. The Rambam writes when he starts Hilchas Chanukah, so he gives you the historical background of the Yom Tov of Chanukah. So he says that they were worshiping Avodah Zarah in the Beis HaMikdash, then the Hashmonaim came and they cleaned out the Beis HaMikdash. And then he says part of the establishment of the holiday of Chanukah was Vehemidu Malchus Minachash Menoim Yeser Ala Masayim Shana. They established a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael that lasted for more than 200 years, and that's part of what you're celebrating about. Not just about the fact that they straightened out the Beis HaMikdash. The fact that they established a Jewish government is also part of the celebration. So there is what to celebrate over the fact that that you have a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, even if the government is not so religious, even if the government is anti-religious, there's still what to celebrate about. The Rambam has a din, the Rambam quotes the pasuk from Navi, that Eliyahu HaNavi was Mechabit Achav HaRasha, Vayishanis Esmasna, Vayoretz Lefana, Eliyahu HaNavi is running in front of Achav. The din requires you have to show kavod to the Malchus. The Gemara learns it out from a pasuk, Sam Tosim Alech HaMelech, so the Gemara understands from that expression, Sam Tosim Shetehe Eimosel Alecha. There's a din of kavod and there's a din of Mora. Mora is a higher level than kavod. Like we were talking the other day, there's a din of Mora HaMikdosh, because the Beis HaMikdosh is the real McCoy, and then the Beis HaKnesset is only a Mikdosh Meyad. So we never speak about Mora Beis HaKnesset, we speak about Kvod Beis HaKnesset. Because there's only a Mikdosh Meyad, so there's no din of Mora, there's only a din of Kovet. And here the Gemara learns out in the Pasuk, there's a din of Mora, some Tosim Alechem El Shetehei, a Masav Alechem. The real din of Mora, the real din of Kovet HaMelech, and the din applies even if the Melech is a Rasha. Yeah, Ben Gurion claimed to have been an atheist. Maybe we ain't on the Mace Matz Marash, maybe we shouldn't believe him. Maybe he was a liar. Okay, so then he was a liar. Either he was an atheist or a liar, whatever. So, but Kolzman, that he was a liar, he was running the government. So the din is you have to have covet for the Melech, even if the Melech is an Adam Rasha, even if he did terrible things. Once he died, that's a different story. The Gemara comments, the Gemara Sanhedrin and other places comments on the Pasuk in Tehillim. As the pasuk goes, the Gemara says about Chizkiyo HaMelech, Nivza B'Yein of Nimos, Vesiri Hashem Mechabed. So the Gemara says, Nivza B'Yein of Nimos, that he was Mevaza himself, Zeh Chizkiyo HaMelech, Shigirat Mesovi Valmita Shal Chavolim. His father was a Rasha, Chizkiyo was a Tzadik. He was a Melech, his father was a Melech. So his father was a Melech Rasha, and after the father died, he was Mevaza the father by schlepping his bones on the ground. So Rashi on the Gemara Sanhedrin asks, how are you allowed to do that? What happened to the din of Kibbut Av? It's the father. And the Gemara says, the din of Kibbut Av even applies Lachamosa, even after the father died. What happened to the din? His father was the Melech. There's a din of Kvayt HaMelech. So Rashi answers, because the Gemara has a din, if the father's a Rasha, the Melech is a Rasha, so the din of Kovet doesn't apply. So the Yerushalmi points out, that's talking Lachamosa. His father was also a Melech, I think. After the father dies, called man, the father was alive. The Rambam's opinion is that there is a din of Kibbut Av, even if Aviv Rasha. The Rambam got it from the Gemara like that. So as long as the father's alive, and as long as the Melech is alive, even if he's a Rasha, there is a din of Kovet. After the Melech dies, and after the father dies, and he's a Rasha, he wasn't religious at all, anti-religious, then there's no mitzvah to be Mechabit. But called man that he's alive, you have to be Mechabit.
Doesn't Gemara say as much also if he's a Rasha, Bechayim, you're not
Bechayim? No. The Gemara in the first daf in Ezel Neshech talks about a man who died and he earned all of his wealth, all of his riches came because he took ribbis from people in Ezel Neshech. So the Gemara has a discussion, should the children be obligated to return the din that you have to give ribbis kitzutzas yotze b'dayan, you have to return it, that only applies l'didei azrachmana, l'brei lo azrachmana. That mitzvah is only on the person himself who took the ribbis. Once he dies and his children yarsh and the ribbis, they don't have the mitzvah to give it back. But maybe they should return the ribbis out of Kibbut Av, that people shouldn't keep on talking about the fact that the father was a Rasha. So the Gemara says, well, it depends. If the father did tshuva before he died, then the father was a tzaddik, then there's a din of Kibbut Av. Father never did tshuva, so then they're not mechuyev to do any Kibbut Av to give it back. So that Gemara is talking after the father died. So the Gemara says there's no Kibbut Av. That's the Gemara. The Tur quotes the Eskan the Rambam. The Tur argues with the Rambam. The Rambam says the din of Kibbut Av even applies Aviv Rasha, and the Tur says it's against the Gemara. The Gemara says the Farish if ain't oisa ma'isa amcha. So there's no din of Kibbut Av yet. So the Yerushalmi gives the teret on Akasha, what the Tur is. Yerushalmi speaks about Melech, that it depends whether the Melech is alive or after the Melech dies. So Yerushalmi and Megillah. So that's what Acharon said, the same regarding the Kibbut Av. Kolzman, the father is alive, so then the Rambam thinks that there's a din of Kibbut Av, even of Aviv Rasha. After he dies, So there's no din. You see, when Ben Gurion visited the yeshivas of Dr. Belkin and Rav Soloveitchik, both gave him cover. So after Ben Gurion died, they were making all kinds of memorials and all kinds of Rav Soloveitchik. What does it have to do with Rav Soloveitchik? Rav Soloveitchik was mechabin while he was alive. He was the Melech Rasha, clearly a Melech Rasha, who was running Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so they didn't have to be mechabin. Like Eliyahu Hanavi was mechabin David Avodah Zarah, mechabin Achav. But after he died, then the Yerushalmi says, then the Babli says, Nibz Abiyen Az Nima, that Chizkiyahu HaMelech was mevadeh his father's body, because the father was a Rasha. After he dies, there's no mitzvah to be mechabin. The Halacha says that we spoke about it last week, that the Melech in Eretz Yisrael, the real Melech in Eretz Yisrael is really the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's what the Zohar comments on the Pasuk in Koheles. Asher Chered Shemalkech Ben Chorin. It's the praises of a country whose king is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one who gives freedom to men. That's how the Zohar interprets that Pasuk. And the Melech Basav Adam, the government who's running Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish government, is supposed to be a representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's supposed to be, it's different from every other country in the world. Every other country, France and England and America, and South Africa, every country, the government is considered as owning the country. That's the famous Ran in the Dark. The Ran quotes the Balei HaTosfos, who think that the obligation to pay taxes, al pi din, is paying rent. If you live in New York, so the area belongs to the government. If you live in America, the country belongs to the United States of America, so they have a right to charge you rent. So how much rent do they charge you? So they decided the whole system of income tax, how much they're going to charge you. But basically, you're paying up taxes based on the idea of rent. That's what the Ran quotes from the Balei HaTosfos. So therefore he comes to the conclusion that you have to pay rent, you only have to pay taxes in all the other countries in the world. But in Eretz Yisrael, what do you mean? The land belongs to the secular government, and the secular government, the boss of Adam, has the right to charge me rent. Kili kol haaretz, Eretz Yisrael belongs to God. The Pesukim say in Chumash, in the end of Chumash Vayikram, Bahab HaChukah said, there's special dinim in Eretz Yisrael. Because the Sfarna says Eretz Yisrael belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he gave all the Jewish people permission, and he obligated us all to live in Eretz Yisrael. So which Melech Basav Adam has a right to charge rent? That's what the Ran says. We happen not to accept that opinion. We pass the Halacha in Shulchan Aruch. When you look in Shulchan Aruch, they quote verbatim from the Rambam, so they say the government in Eretz Yisrael has a right to charge taxes, and even a government in Chutz La'aretz also has a right to charge afilu b'chutz La'aretz, but the main din is in Eretz Yisrael. So we assume the first part of the part of what the Balei HaTosfos said is correct. Eretz Yisrael belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and every Jew has a right to live there. But the second part we don't accept la halacha, that the obligation to pay taxes is only based on rent, and the government has a right to charge you rent. We don't accept that part. The government has a right to charge you tax, not based on rent. Even if you have permission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to live in Eretz Yisrael, still have to pay tax. A different word. The problem, the reason why there were so many anti-Zionists years ago, and there's still left over a lot of anti-Zionists, because the original Zionist movement was totally anti-religious. The motivation to move to Eretz Yisrael was not only to be freed from the Malchus Umas Oilu, from the old Tzavrei Hagoyim. It was to be freed from Malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wanted to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael and cast off all the mitzvahs. They said, you only need the mitzvahs when you live in Chutz La'aretz to maintain your Jewish identity. When you live in Eretz Yisrael, you have a Jewish country, it's a Jewish society, you don't need any mitzvahs. So their whole, the motivation for establishing Medina was in order to throw away the whole Torah. So that's why there were many tzaddikim who felt that you're not allowed to move to Eretz Yisrael. You can move to Eretz Yisrael, you'll fall in. Many religious Jews who moved to Eretz Yisrael did fall in. They lost their religious observance. And even if you'll be so strong that you won't lose your religious observance, so the many tzaddikim held that it's improper that the Mizrahi should join hands. We should establish a Medina together with the anti-religious. Their kavan in establishing the Medina was to undo the whole Torah, to throw away the whole Torah. So how can you join them, Mishutim? And the Rabbanim and the Mizrahi felt that there was nothing wrong with that. The Medina is a Medina. The idea of the Medina is one of the mitzvahs of Torah. The Ramban, everybody quotes the Ramban in Mitzvah, says, hey, Dalit, when the Ramban gives you a list of mitzvahs which he thinks the Rambam forgot to list. So mitzvah number Dalit is to establish a Medina in Eretz Yisrael, establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. So everybody quotes from that Ramban. And the Megillah, everybody knows the Megillah says to defend the Rambam, why the Rambam didn't count the mitzvah of establishing a Medina. The Pashto says that the Megillah says to misunderstood the Ramban. mitzvah to establish a medina, the Rambam does count. He has it in the Sefer HaMitzvot, and he has it in the Mishnah Torah, the Gimel Mitzvot, in Tzav Yisrael. First mitzvah to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. Second mitzvah to wipe out Amalek. The third mitzvah is live in this land based up here. So the Rambam did count the mitzvah of establishing a medina. So what did the Ramban want in mitzvah sesei dalet? So the Pashto says the Ramban had a different tine against the Rambam. The Rambam didn't count the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam quotes all the dinim. There's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, but he didn't count that as a mitzvah bifnei atzmo. So Ramban quotes the pasuk "Baharashtem es haaretz v'yishavtem bo." So "Baharashtem es haaretz" to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, that the Rambam also counted. That wasn't a tine. That wasn't a complaint that the Ramban had against the Rambam. The complaint was the second half of the pasuk. The Yishavtim Bo, there's a mitzvah not only to establish a Jewish Medina but to live in Eretz Yisrael. All the Jews in the world should move to Eretz Yisrael and live there. So that the Rambam quotes the Dinim, but he doesn't write that that's one of the mitzvahs of Torah. So that was the Rambam's taina. So some of the Acharonim wrote, yeah, the Rambam quotes the Dinim, but they're only Midirabbanan. The mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael is only Midirabbanan. The mitzvah to establish a Medina is a mitzvah in Torah. The mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael is only a mitzvah in Rabbanan. Very difficult. That's what the Knesset HaGdolah writes. Very difficult. The mitzvah to live in Eretz is only with the Rabbanan. I mean, this pasuk is only with the Rabbanan. The Yishavtim Bo is only with the Rabbanan. Very difficult. How can you say it like that? So most of the later Acharonim assume that the Rambam also agrees that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. But it's a different reason why the Rambam didn't count. It's included in another mitzvah, subsumed on another mitzvah, whatever. But the mitzvah to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, there never was a machlokes, of course. The Rambam and the Ramban, they both count that mitzvah. Abel Yemei of Bloch was the one who established the tells the yeshiva in America years ago after the Second World War. So there's a famous letter that he wrote that was printed and reprinted where he complains about the fact that there were three in Yonim in Europe that the Orthodox Jews always, the Haredim always ran away from. One was Zionism, because the Apikursim, most of the Zionists were anti-religious, not just not observant, they were anti-religious. The whole motivation to establish a Medina was in order to undo the whole religion. So that's why most of the religious Jews stayed away from the whole Zionist movement. And the second was the study of Tanakh, because the Apikursim were giving all kinds of biblical criticism, giving all kinds of Apikursish interpretations, so the religious Jews ran away from the study of Tanakh. And the third was speaking Lashon HaKodesh, because the Zionists were the ones, the anti-religious Zionists were the ones who were speaking Hebrew, and Achad Ham, who was also an atheist, will believe him also. He's a liar or he's telling the truth, he one or the other. Acharam was a real atheist, that's for sure. I don't know about Ben Gurion. Acharam was for real. He was a real atheist. You read all of his books, you can tell. So Acharam was one of those. They had a whole group of people. They would always deliver papers in Hebrew. They were always writing biblical Hebrew and delivering papers in Hebrew. So because of the fact that the bitterly anti-religious Jews were the ones who were making the Tchiya on the Hebrew language, that's why the religious Jews ran away from speaking Lashon Kodesh. So Abel Yemei of Bloch wrote a letter to someone that was printed. He writes, that's not right. These are part of the mitzvahs in the Torah. The Rambam writes in the Pirush HaMishnayos on Pirkei Avos on the Mishnah, have observed the mitzvah kala kavach amura, that the mitzvah kala speaking Lashon Kodesh. So we should all speak in Hebrew, we should all learn Hebrew, we should all know a correct Hebrew. Tanakh is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Just because the Apikursim are studying Tanakh, that's why we should avoid it. Why? We should grab hold of the Tanakh. The Tanakh is ours, it's not theirs. We should learn Tanakh and learn it and teach it properly. And Zionism is also one of the mitzvahs of Torah. We shouldn't neglect these three things, the Tanakh with the Lashon HaKodesh and the Zionism, just because the Apikursim are talking about them. Eretz Yisrael plays a major role in the Torah, and Medina's Yisrael plays that there should be a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. It's not just a secular concept. That's part of the mitzvah. That's according to the Rambam and the Ramban. That's one of the Tariag mitzvahs, to establish a Jewish Medina. Rav Soloveitchik, every so often, would speak in public about the difference between the Medina and the Memshala. The Medina is a holy thing. The Medina is a fulfillment of this mitzvah, Lahamed Lahamelech. The Memshala means the particular people are running the government now. They're rotten people. We're not happy about the Memshalah, but no one's unhappy about the Medina. In principle, that you have a Jewish Medina, that they tell over a story about Rabbi Ruderman, that one of the younger Mismachim, who's now a very prominent rabbi in the Baltimore area. So he was a rabbi in a shul. In the front of the shul, I think the Parochas had a Magen David on it. as many parechas and have a Magen David. So some of the people that daven in a shul had a taina, how can you have a Magen David? The Magen David represents the Israeli flag, represents the government and Eretz Yisrael, so how can you have a Magen David? We came with the shaila to Rabbi Rudiman, is he allowed to have a parochas that has a Magen David? So Rabbi Rudiman said, making believe that he didn't understand what the shaila was, so he says, he seems to remember that when he learned in Slabodka, the parochas on the Aron Kodesh had a Magen David. So the young Musmach says, yeah, but Slabodka was before the Medina. Now it's after the Medina. So the Magen David represents the Medina now because that's the emblem on the Israeli flag. So Rabbi Rudiman put on this dumb look. So he says, so what's wrong in the Medina? What's wrong in the Medina? So he starts talking, what do you mean, what's wrong? They're forcing the Jews, they're cutting off their pay in the early years, and they're violating all the Mitzvah Torah, and they're kidnapping children. Crazy, crazy things that were going on in the beginning, the early years of the Medina. He said, oh, you mean the Memshala? Yeah, the Memshala is great. The people are running the government. They're miserable people, but no one is happy. The Chilonim are also unhappy about the Memshala. I think they're more unhappy than we are. But the Medina per se, the concept of having a Medina, there's nothing trace about that. Rav Soloveitchik in his drushes, in his printed drushes, complained about the fact that many of the Jews felt too much of an allegiance to Medina Yisrael. They would back Medina Yisrael, whatever they're going to do. Whatever the Medina does, they back it. So he says that's called Avodah Zarah. You only have an absolute allegiance to God. You're not allowed to have an absolute allegiance to any other institution, including Medina Yisrael. That's Avodah Zarah. We support the Medina, we support the government when they're doing the right things. When they're not doing the right things, we don't support them. If they're going to cause everybody to be Mechal Shabbos, they're going to insist everybody has to eat treifas and so on. We don't support them. It's not that by definition whatever the Medina does is a mitzvah. They have to do things properly. I remember many years ago, a few years after Hakamas HaMedina, Rav Soloveitchik spoke in Lampert Auditorium on Yom HaAtzmaut, and he delivered the talk that's now known as Kol Dodi Dofek. He was knocking on the shtender when it was called Dodi Dofek. He was knocking, he goes, all the different knocks that the Rebbe Shalom is inviting us to come to Eretz Yisrael, we should go to Eretz Yisrael. So, and later on he wrote this up in Hebrew, and it was printed in Hadoar, and then it was reprinted many times. So, part of what he left out from the Kol Dodi, he didn't print out everything that he said when he delivered the talk. So one of the comments they left out was that he said he sees that, he feels that Hakamas HaMedina was a very important thing, positive, not something that you should recite kinnis over. It's something we should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something positive, and so on and so forth, fulfillment of the mitzvah, the Ramban and so on, but he said he doesn't think that we have to go get so carried away. Like in Eretz Yisrael, on Yom HaAtzmaut, they take haircuts and they shave. Those who don't shave in Sfira, those who don't take haircuts in Sfira. So when it comes Yom HaAtzmaut, so some of the yeshivas insist you got to shave. That's how Tzvi Yehuda Cook used to insist. And his yeshiva, they don't shave in Sfira. And Yom HaAtzmaut, they insist that everybody has to shave. And whoever wouldn't shave, he would point the finger to them, Tzvi Yehuda, and say, Hakoras Panav Onsavo. I can tell by looking at your face that you're not a mammon, that you don't believe that the Rabbanu Shalom gave us Medina Yisrael. You're not pikeiros. That's what he would say. Akoras panavansav. So Soloveitchik said he thinks that that's not right. He says that he developed the notion at that time that before every yontif we have a period of seriousness in order that we shouldn't get carried away with the simcha of the yontif. So he said on Erev Pesach you have tainis b'chayrus. And then before Shavuos, you have the whole period of the Sfira. And then on Erev Rosh Hashanah, people recite the Slichas for a couple of days. Erev Rosh Hashanah is a tonus. Many people fast Erev Rosh Hashanah. Before Sukkot, you have Yom Kippur. Erev Purim, you have Tainus Esther. So he said this is an old minig, a beautiful minig, for various reasons, that we observe a serious period of Avelus during Sfira. And he didn't think that this was sufficient cause to be matir weddings, and to take haircuts. He used to be upset in the later years when Soloveitchik was still coming to the yeshiva. So he used to play music outside right on this corner, and the students used to dance. So he was upset about that. He thought that that's not right. He was very upset about that. Yeah, I remember Soloveitchik on Simchas Torah didn't dance either. It wasn't his thing. He used to clap on the bima. When the boys would dance, he would be banging on the bima. He had two left legs. He didn't know how to dance. The minig of sphira is a minig, it's not a din. So in order to be mata sphira, I'm not choylik on our salvation, but in order to be mata, the minig of sphira, you have to have a makam mitzvah. Let's say if a couple got married in the end of Nisni, and then they're having sheva brachas in chodesh iyar. So you'd say, not allowed to play music at the sheva brachas. If the minig of makam is that they always play music in the sheva brachas, so they should play music in theirs also. It depends. Some communities, some families, some communities, they never play music. You don't always play music in the sheva brachas. So if you don't, so you shouldn't play music during sphira either. But if the minig ha-mokam and the minig of the families that they always play music at a sheva brachas, some of them, they should play the music even during sphira. If it's a mokam mitzvah, so you can make it. It doesn't have to be a mokam mitzvah dafka like a sheva brachas. The pashtus, if you're only dealing with the minig, you're not dealing with the real deal. So if it's any kind of a mokam mitzvah, genuksa, this is also a mokam mitzvah. People want to express their gratitude towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Hatzolat HaGeula of giving us the Medina Yisrael. So why not? So those people, Rabbi Soloveitchik could celebrate without dancing because he wasn't into dancing and he didn't need the tunes with the music. So he thought that it was superfluous. He didn't need it. Other people were not gonna get excited by learning the Rambam Hilchos Trumas about Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. But learning Mishnah Yiskal, other people only get excited by dancing and singing. No. It's also a makam mitzvah. You don't need that. It should be absolutely such a mitzvah. Rav Neriah has several volumes of biographies of Rav Kook. He has two stories that are very interesting, that are relevant to halacha. He said that the Jewish workers in the 1920s, I think, in Eretz Yisrael, Jewish workers in Tel Aviv, in Eretz Yisrael, they eat fleishiks for lunch, and amilchiks for supper. Like in Europe, a lot of places they do like that. So the Jewish workers in Tel Aviv were not religious, so they used to go into the non-kosher restaurants and have a treif meal for lunch. So the Mizrahi was working for a long time till he finally made a kosher restaurant in Tel Aviv, right? So they got all these non-observant Jews to come eat in the kosher restaurant. Then it came to Shabbat, the 9 days. The 9 days, we don't eat meat, so what are you going to do with the kosher restaurant? You're going to serve the meat in the 9 days. It's Alif Ne'iver. How can you serve meat? But then you're going to close the restaurant, so they're going to go back to eat treif. So what are you going to do? So they went to ask Rav Kook. So Rav Kook was busy. He was in the middle of a dinner or something. He saw that someone's waiting. So he walked over and he asked them, What is it? So the fellow explained to Shaila. So he said, Bekitzer, they should stay open and everybody can eat. Even the religious Jews can eat flesh. So the guy is hacking the religious. He said, it's a makam mitzvah. It's a suras mitzvah. If he's saving the other people from eating non-kosher, so that's also a suras mitzvah. So strictly speaking, that's called a suras mitzvah. That's on the books, that's not called a suras mitzvah. But he felt he's dealing with a minig. It's not a real din to eat not that boss of the eye, dealing with a minig. So this is enough of a suras mitzvah to be matter that minig. Like Rabbi Kivega writes on Shulchan Aruch, that person is a choyla. And they need to eat meat in order to regain their health. So the makam choyla is certainly muta. So Rabbi Kivega says, what if a woman is a nido? So she's losing a little blood. So she's going to challah, she's going to faint. She can. She's a little weak. She's weaker than she usually is during the period of nidus because she's losing blood. So if she'll have a little meat, so it'll help her out a little bit. So Rabbi Kivega quotes the Achrayim and says that in 9 days, an isha nidus permitted to have flesh. So it's not really a choyla. Miktas choyla is enough to be mata because you're only dealing with a minig. So the same over here. A miktas makam mitzvah is enough to be mata. It certainly is a miktas makam mitzvah. And then Rav Neri has another incident that he quotes, that when Rav Kook was a bacher, he learned in Balazhin Yeshiva. And he was a favorite Talmud of the Netziv. That was the time that the Netziv and Rav Chaim were both there. So he some of the Talmudim liked the Netziv Shurim, they didn't care for Rav Chaim's, because the Netziv was the old style of learning. And some of them only liked Rav Chaim's, they didn't care for the Netziv. And many Talmudim went to both 3 days a week, I think Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. One of them said the Shurim, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the next one said the Shurim. Used to alternate, and they said the three blood gemara. He did the next three blood gemara. They went by. So some of the students went to both, and some of them only went to one. See, so Rav Kook enjoyed the Netziv Shem. He didn't enjoy Rav Chaim. It was a new style of learning. So later on, Rav Kook got married, and he had a rabbanus in Europe, and he came back to visit the yeshiva, and he happened to come to visit in the 9 days. So the Netziv was so excited to see him, so he said they should serve a fleishig meal. But he was talking to him privately, not for the whole yeshiva. They should serve fleishik, asuras mitzvah. to me mekabel panim a big time chok. Nine that has suras mitzvah. A rabbi comes to visit in the 9 days. Yeah, shtikol suras mitzvah. So then it's held that that's enough to be matir the minig of not eating flesh in the 9 days. So over here also, it's certainly sufficient. We don't have to blow things out of proportion. It's a minig, but so it's a minig not to have music in sfira. You don't have to blow it out of proportion. A minig. So it's a makam mitzvah. So you can be matir the minig. It's a makam mitzvah that you want to celebrate. So we say, well, let's celebrate Yom HaTzmaut after Shavuot. No, HaKomos HaMedina. What? We decided when to make the Medina. When the mandate was up, that's when they made the Medina. The mandate was up on Hayir. So why shouldn't you celebrate now? You don't need that it should be a Mokka, a Suras Mitzvah that should be recognized by the Gemara. In Psochem and Daf Mem Tes, the Gemara has a halacha, a discussion al Pi Halacha, what constitutes a Suras Mitzvah in the Magen Avraham and Hilchos Pesach has all the dinim. It doesn't have to correspond to the Suras Mitzvah, the strict standards of Suras Mitzvah. A Mokka Mitzvah called it was enough to be Matar and Minim.
On a year like this year, when it's not Hayir, is it less than Suras Mitzvah, or is it just the fact that it's celebrating Tumos Da'as
Hashem? If the people have a reason why they want to celebrate today, so Me'ech HaTeisa, why not celebrate today? I don't see that it's such a problem. It's interesting, the first year when they established the Medina, if I'm not mistaken, Hayir was on Erev Shabbos. And the mandate was over Friday night at midnight. So legally speaking, they couldn't establish the Medina till Friday night. That was really the middle of over here. But if they would establish a Medina then, they would be taking all the pictures, they'd be writing the declaration of the Medina at night, on Shabbos. So some of the people who signed that document were religious people. Probably Maimon was one of them, some of the others, yeah. So they encouraged them to declare the Medina, to have the whole ceremony on Hayir. Really, it wasn't legitimate. Really, it should have been Vavir. And that's at that time, Rabbi Chalap's grandfather, Rabbi Chalap didn't know this story. Professor Horowitz told him this story. That his grandfather, Rabbi Yanki Moshe Chalap, had studied the Sefer Kol HaTorah. This is a sefer that's supposedly written by one of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon didn't have so many students. He didn't have a yeshiva, so he just had a few, 15 people used to come in and talk to him and learn a little bit. So that's the whole Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was considered the greatest Talmud of the Vilna Gaon because he used to come twice a year to talk to the Gaon and learning for a couple of hours or for a couple of days. That was the whole thing. That was the whole Talmud of the Gaon. And when people referred to him as a Talmud of the Grosse, he said, how can you call me? He felt someone called, how can you call me a Talmud of the Grosse? Just go twice a year to talk and learning a little bit. What kind of Talmud of the Grosse? He didn't give shiurim on a regular basis. So there's a sefer that's attributed, it's supposed to be written by one of the Talmidim of the Grosse, and then it was rewritten by some other character in Eretz Yisrael. They're not sure whether it's authentic or not, because he was a little eccentric. So the name of that sefer is Kol HaTorah. This sefer was printed before 1948, but the Shaar Blat doesn't have any date, so it doesn't say when it was printed. But there were Rabbi Horowitz, Professor Horowitz was there. He remembered the sefer was way before HaKomos HaMedina. And then Rabbi Mendel Kasher reprinted. Rabbi Mendel Kasher printed a big fat book that's called HaTkufa HaGdolah. In the middle of his book has about the comments on the Rambam and Hilchus, the end of Hilchus Malachim, Rabbi Yosef HaMashiach. He quotes all the different opinions. It's a very fascinating book. Kedai to read at Kufagdala. So in the middle of that big fat sefer, he has the whole book Kol HaTorah. So in the Kol HaTorah, supposedly written by Talmud of the Grosse, he says that something great is going to happen towards the Bias HaMashiach and Hay in Vavir. He doesn't say Hay in Vavir. He writes which day it is in the sphere. He writes Yisod Shevet Teferis and Malchus Shevet Teferis. In our language, that's Hay Yir and Vavir. So they didn't know what in the world he was talking about until they established the Medina. So now people look back at this book, they say, yeah, Mendel Kasher forged the whole book. Mendel Kasher didn't forge the whole book. He reprinted the Kol HaTorah, which existed before. Kol HaTorah was there before the HaKomos HaMedina. It's just that when the Batlan who printed the book never put on the Shaar Blat, never put what year it was when it was printed. So people now can, revisionists can rewrite history, and they're going to say that the whole Kol HaTorah is printed, was written, composed after HaKomos HaMedina, but it's not true, the book existed before. So Professor Horowitz said he remembers that Rabbi Yanki Moshe Chalap was so excited when they established the Medina on Hayir, and it really should have been Vavir year. So he said, now we know Pshat in this Sefer, that he says something major is going to happen, is going to lead till the coming of Mashiach, and the building of the Bais HaShlish is going to happen on Yisai Shebet Teferis, and Malchus Shebet Teferis is really Heir and Vav Yir, should have been on Vav Yir, but because of the Chilul Shabbos issue, that's why they moved it to Heir. It also says there in the book that something major is going to happen on Chof Ches Yir, that's Yom Yerushalayim, but that he didn't live to see. Rabbi Yankim Moshe Chalat. So he said he doesn't know what that line means. Years later, they found out what that line means. It's interesting that in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, they quote that if someone deserves to be put in Cherem because of his good demais and tevim, so you shouldn't put him in Cherem during the Yomim Naroim season of the year, because it's a serious time of the year, and you shouldn't be... It's not proper to make things more serious than they have to be. So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Then the later Achreinim have commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, so they will give you a list of additional days where it's not proper to put somebody in chet. So they have a whole bunch of dates that we don't know what in the world they're supposed to correspond to. And they say themselves that the Achreinim write that this is all a pikabol. They don't know what these days are supposed to correspond to. Some of them, we still don't know what they correspond to. One of those days is Heir. So that's one of the days. They don't have Vav Yir, they don't have Chav Ches Yir, but they have Heir is one of those days. So that's a question, let's say, in Eretz Yisrael, they developed a minhag to celebrate, the secular Jews celebrate Heir in a secular way, and the religious Jews celebrate Heir. In a religious sense, this is an Aschalt of the Geula, Al Pidin, this is going to Hakamas HaMedina, this is a Jewish Medina, this is going to lead up to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Looks like it's going to lead up, it may take a few centuries, but still Al Pidin is called an Aschalt of the Geula. So there's a... So there's cause to celebrate. So the Shabbos is, Heir is going to come out on Shabbos, and all the people are going to drive around to the cemeteries, and they're going to drive around, and going to have a military parade and everything, so there's going to be major Chilul Shabbos. So the whole Hakamas HaMedina was Heir instead of Avir in order to avoid Chilul Shabbos. So it makes sense that they moved it to a different date. So the question is, which date should they move it to? Should you move it to an earlier date? Should you move the celebration to a later date? So the Gemara Megillah in the first Perek has a klal that when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, so you fast on Sunday. Why don't you fast on Thursday? So the Gemara says, "Bidumi poranusa loy magdimino." If you're observing, if you're commemorating a tragedy, so you postpone the commemoration of the tragedy. But if, let's say, if Purim falls out on Shabbos and you don't read the Megillah on Shabbos, so you don't read the Megillah later, that's a happy thing. So happy things you do earlier. So those who are in the practice of reciting kinnis on Heir, so they should postpone. They shouldn't be magdim. Those who are in practice of commemorating in a joyous fashion, so they should be magdim. Okay? So that's what many rabbanim felt, that in Eretz Yisrael, that there's a concern there's going to be Chilul Shabbos, so they should be magdim. In America, no one's going to get so carried away. No one's making a military parade. No one's going to be Mechal Shabbos. The religious Jew is not going to be Mechal Shabbos. So that's why many rabbanim are of the opinion that we in America should have, if we want to observe Yom HaTzmut, so we should have the observance on Heir. How can we observe on a different day from Eretz Yisrael? Why not? What's the problem? Purim was observed on two different days. And there's no problem. Adarabba. Rabbi Shlomo Levilna has in his commentary on the Gemara, the first daf in Megillah, Maseches Megillah, he raises the question, what prompted the Chachamim to institute the 2 days of Purim? That half of the Jews should observe Purim on Yudalit Adar, half of the Jews should observe Purim on Tezvav Adar. Why don't they establish it one day for everybody? So he says, they wanted everybody to know that it's not a din deraisa. In the Chumash, we have the din tarachas yolachem lagev agor b'soichachem, that everybody observes the mitzvahs in the same fashion. So they didn't want that this should, they didn't want to violate Baal Tosef. They didn't want anybody to think that the Yontav of Purim is a deraisa. So the Bedavki instituted that should be observed on two different days, and no one should think that it's a din deraisa. There's nothing wrong with observing, half of the Jews will observe Yom HaTzmut on one day, half of the Jews will observe on another day. Let's say on Purim, even those who observe Purim on Yudalit, so we delete Tachman on Tezvav. And those who celebrate Purim on Tezvav, they leave that Tachman on Yudalit. So there's nothing wrong. Let's say if we'll observe Purim on Shabbos, and we'll leave that Tachman today, because in Eretz Yisrael they're celebrating today. And in Eretz Yisrael they celebrate today. And on Shabbos they'll leave that the Tzidkos Chatzedek. They'll leave that the Tachman Yom Tzedek anyway, so they'll leave that the Tzidkos Chatzedek. I don't see that it has to be. It doesn't indicate that we support the Medina less. How does it indicate whether you're supporting the Medina less? What's wrong if you have 2 different days to observe Yom HaTzmut? I don't see what the problem is. In Europe, many of the Jews were opposed to the Zionist movement because the Zionist movement was trying to establish a Medina, v'derech ha-teva. And they thought that the Bias HaMashiach and the Gula HaTzid is supposed to be l'mayla min ha-teva. So many point out that the Gemara has a discussion of this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and the last parent has long, long discussions of the Gula and the Bias HaMashiach. So the Gemara points out that there's a contradiction between two psukim. One pasuk in Zechariah describes the Melech HaMashiach as coming Oni, a humble person, Onov. Humble Onov is often written in Tehillim, in Tanakh, Oni. Oni v'roichav al chamor, he's going to ride on a donkey. A donkey goes very slowly. A horse gallops quickly. A donkey goes slowly. So that pasuk in Zechariah seems to describe the coming of Mashiach, the derech ha-teva, in a slow process. Then the other pasuk in Daniel describes v'orei manoni shmaya. You're going to see someone flying in the air, in the among the clouds, in the middle of all the clouds. L'mayla min ha-teva, and quickly. It's wild stuff. L'mayla min ha-teva. So the Gemara says, isn't it a contradiction? So the Gemara says, the teretz is, there are two possibilities. If zochu, it's going to be a manoni shmaya, it's going to be quick, and it's going to be l'mayla min ha-teva. And if lo zochu, it's going to be b'derech ha-teva. So how do we know, how can we guess which way the Rebbeinu Shlom wants to bring the Gula? Maybe the Gula is going to be this way. That's how the Maharal Prague points out that the Gemara Sanhedrin has an Agadat in the last Perek that Rabbi Shua Bar Levi goes and he asks Eliyahu HaNavi, when is Mashiach coming? So he says, go ask Mashiach when he's coming. I don't know. So he goes, he says, where's Mashiach? So he says, he's on the outskirts of Rome. So he goes and he asks Mashiach, and the whole conversation goes on. So the Maharal Prague has a comment. Why is Mashiach on the outskirts of Rome? Should he be in Meir Shorim? Or in Kerem Yavna? Or in Etzion? So what's that? What's he doing? He says, Mashiach is in the most improbable place where you would never dream in a million years. He says, who is the Moshiach show you saw when they left Eretz Mitzrayim? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't even there. He was brought up in the king's palace. He wasn't even brought up with the Jews. And then he had to run away. He wasn't even there the whole time. Even the Chutzlor the whole time wasn't even in Mitzrayim. So the Maharal Prague develops this theme that in the most unbelievable, the most improbable fashion, the Gula will be. We can't guess the way that Rabbi Shalom is going to bring about the Gula. Rabbi Shalom does whatever he wants. Many of the Gedolim are very opposed to many of the observances on Yom HaTzmaut, Rav Soloveitchik concluded, because they made a joke out of it. In many communities, they blow shofar on Yom HaTzmaut. The shofar is for Rosh Hashanah. And they say part of Kabbalah Shabbos, so they say Hoidu before Kabbalah Shabbos. But they say the long psuk of the Zimmer from Shabbos and Yom Tov. So what they're trying to demonstrate is, it looks like they're trying to take the whole Jewish religion, should bow down in front of the Medina. The Medina is the pestle, the Medina is the most important thing. You take every aspect of this Jewish religion, the Shofar from Rosh Hashanah, and all the davening, any part of any davening can possibly dream up, and have everything in the service of the Medina. See, that's totally ridiculous. Rav Soloveitchik was very upset about that. Why do you introduce the parts from the Kabbalah Shabbos, and this, and that, and the other thing? And he used to oppose it publicly, but then they started printing it in the newspapers that this was encouraged by the Rabbanut. So he didn't want to be Mevazah the Rabbanut. So he stopped talking in public about it, but he didn't change his opinion. So he was very upset. He said, you want to observe Yom HaTzmaut, so you observe it. According to the way we have ways to institute a Yom Tov, how to observe a Yom Tov. You don't go, wow, what are you blowing shofar about? One of the main things that we celebrate, that we're rejoicing about on Yom HaTzmaut, is that there was a big chizuk in Liman HaTorah. That for many years after the Second World War, really, ha'olam ha'yashamim, there weren't too many people learning Torah. And after the Medina was established, and they established the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, and all the Jews and chutzlores have such a devotion to Medina Yisrael, so you have Jews who are not so much into learning, not so strong in the shmiras and mitzvahs, but they encourage their children, or they allow their children to go to Eretz Yisrael. We have more learning going on now than we really had for a long time. So that's a tremendous cause for celebration. That itself is a tremendous cause for celebration. Rav Soloveitchik in his drosha, in his Kol Dodi Dovik drosha, pointed out one of the things that was so significant at that time, that the Catholic Church had been preaching for many years that the Jewish people lost their status as the Yam HaNifchar when they rejected Jesus. That they are now the Yam HaNifchar. And the Gemara quotes stories like that, that that was one of the tainus of all the early Christians, that we lost our status as the Yam HaNifchar. And proof to this fact is that the Jews are downtrodden and they're suffering. And they have so many pogroms, they're always attacking the Jews. And then the Shoah, they killed so many millions and millions of Jews. I think the number of 6 million Jews, that's based on Nazi records. I think there are many more than 6 million Jews who were killed in the war, unofficially. So officially on their records, that's 6 million. He used to say years ago, right after the war, he said 9 million Jews were killed. Many, many more than 6 million were killed. Not a Guzman. So that was the Catholic Church was getting more Jews to convert to Christianity after the war because they proved that the Jewish religion is false. You people are downtrodden. You're not the Yam HaNifchar. And the Catholic position was regarding Zionism from day number one. They were opposed to the Zionist movement. They said, how can Eretz Yisrael be returned to the Jewish people? Eretz Yisrael was the Eretz HaNifcheres that belongs to the Yam HaNifchar. And they lost their chance. They rejected Jesus, so they lost their status as the Yam HaNifchar. So they said, it's never going to belong to the Jews. So that's why, based on their religious beliefs, they were opposed to the Zionist movement. Then after the Medina was established, so they were stunned. How can it be? It's against their animamim. So they never recognized the Medina for many years. But they were hoping and praying that it's going to disappear. But it didn't disappear. So the way they defended their religion was, the Jews don't really have the real part of Eretz Israel. They only have the modern Israel. But they don't have Hebron, where Avraham Avinu lived. They don't have the Makom HaMikdash. They don't have the Yerushalayim, Ir Atika, and so on. They just have the modern part of Eretz Israel. So that was the territory for many years until the Mechemet Sheshet Hayamim. After Mechemet Sheshet Hayamim, so the Jews had Yerushalayim. So the jig was up. So what's the territory for the... How come the Jews have Yerushalayim? So that day, when they conquered Yerushalayim, the Pope said... Why did the Pope say? Because the Pope was bothered. So the Pope said, we have to internationalize Yerushalayim. For so many years, it didn't bother him. There were a lot of popes. They never bothered them. They don't have to internationalize Yerushalayim, but if it's under Jewish control... That's a contradiction to their religion. How can the Jews be sure that the territory that they gave on their religion to defend their religion, that the Jews are no longer the Yam HaNifchar, and that's why they'll never return to Eretz Israel until they convert to Christianity? And they didn't convert, and they got the Makom HaMikdash. So they said, we have to take away the Makom HaMikdash from the Jewish people. And that's what the Pope, to the day that he died, he still said like that. We have to internationalize Yerushalayim. Internationalize Yerushalayim is because it's against their religion. That's what Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook said. That's Yehorig Bal Yava. Why is it Yehorig Bal Yava? Abadi is right, Yehorig Bal Yava. So he used to say, Atzvi Yehuda Cook is a lunatic. Maybe he was a lunatic. I don't know. I didn't know. But this is not lunacy. This says in Shulchan Aruch. It says if a guy holds a gun and he says, you eat that chazer, I'm going to kill you. So the din is that Pikuach Nefesh is Dechad Aver, you eat the chazer. What if the guy holds the gun to you and he says, you eat the chazer because since Yoshke came, the laws of the Torah are not binding anymore. And if you don't eat the chazer, I'm going to kill you. Then eating the chazer implies that Yoshke came and he changed the laws of the Torah. Then it says that it's Yehorig Bal Yavar. So that's the same over here. That's what Tzvi Yehuda Cook said. If you're going to give away Yerushalayim to the... You're going to internationalize Yerushalayim, not give it away to the Arabs. If you internationalize Yerushalayim because of the pressure from the Vatican, that means that you're giving in to their religion. You're admitting that our religion is a false religion and the Catholic religion is correct. And we're not entitled to Eretz Yisrael because they're not the Yam HaNifchar, because we didn't accept Jesus. So that's terrible. It's a big problem now. The speakers last night, there were some people who were listening to the speakers last night, they were upset. Why didn't they make any comments about Gush Katif? One of the speakers said, the only way to deal with terrorism is with force. What does force mean? Give them everything away. Give them away so that you're giving in to the terrorists. You're just going to cause more terrorism. The Pashtus says that you're not supposed to give away Gush Katif. That's scandalous. It's terrible. One of the young Rabbanim has a position in Alabama. So he called me up last week to talk to me. So he says he's dead embarrassed. He says the local Goyisha senator speaks to him. And he says, you Jews are crazy. What country in the world would ever give away part of their country? What are you giving it away for? Kill the Arabs. Chase them all out. It's unbelievable. If you follow this Chassam Sefer, that when you have it, the Chassam Sefer thought that every war in the world is an Aschalta Degula. So that's hard to accept. And Munkacher went along, Mincha Soloz went along. He's speaking about the First World War. He thinks that based on the Chassam Sefer, is Austro-Prussian War. The First World War was also Aschalta Degula. Rashi on Sanhedrin does not write like that. Rashi on Sahed writes in the Gemara in Chelek, Melchamas are Aschal to the Gula, the Melchamas in Eretz Yisrael, about who's going to be the Balabas of Eretz Yisrael, whether the Jews will control Eretz Yisrael or the Goyim will. So that's Aschal to the Gula. If the Jews win the war, if we lose the war, it's not Aschal to the Gula. But if you win the war, that's an Aschal to the Gula, because winning the war means that we're going to have the Shlita over Eretz Yisrael. That's exactly what it says in the Gemara. The Zionists didn't make this up. The Chassam Sofer at this watered it down. He said every Mocham in the world. It's hard to understand. That's Aschal to the Gula. And then the Chassam Sofer says whenever you're engaged in Aschal to the Gula, he holds up the Halacha. You're not allowed to slow down the process. You have to let the Ribbono Shel Olam continue his process to bring the rest of the Gula. So that's the Pashtus now. We have to pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam that he should maintain all of Eretz Yisrael under Jewish control. He's going to give away Gush Katif. It's going to be a bigger sakana if ever. There's going to be more terrorism all over the world. If you give in to terrorists, the chen ledav asof. You have a lot to pray for. You know, the Torah quotes there was a practice in the days of the Gaonim that on Purim they used to say Tachnun. Our meaning is we don't say Tachnun. But in the days of the Gaonim they used to say Tachnun, many yeshivas. And they said the reason why was because on Purim their prayers were answered. So what better day is there to recite Tachnun? So many years ago here in the Minyan, where I dab in Rabbi Lifshitz's Minyan, so they used to have a couple of real strong Mizrahi people. They used to say they used to say Hallel with a bracha on Yom Ha'atzmaut, and they said Tachmin also. They used to joke. They used to say sometimes Bahab, Slichos Bahab. They used to joke that every Minyan has its own meaning. Rabbi Lifshitz's Minyan, they say Tachmin with a bracha. They didn't say a bracha on Tachmin. They said that's the way they said Tachmin with a bracha means they said Tachmin, and they said a bracha on Hallel. Truth of the matter is that Alpi Halacha is not a stira. In the days of the Gaon they had such a practice that they said Tachnun on Purim. What better day is there to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When we observe Yom Ha'atzmaut, it should be within reason. We don't have to get carried away with the secular. There's a lot of secularism. There's a lot of secular aspects to Medinat Yisrael because it was established by very, very secular, anti-religious people. So there's a lot of secular in Yonim and Eretz Yisrael. That's not what we're rejoicing about. We're rejoicing over the fact that there's more Torah now, that the Jews have an independent Jewish government, which stands a good chance of leading up to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and the Jews were saved from after the Second World War. The Jews were in the DP camps, and there was nowhere for them to go. There were thousands and thousands of Jews. No country in the world wanted to take them, and they were sitting there in the DP camps for several years. For several years until 1948, after the Medina was established, and they all went to Eretz Yisrael. We have a lot to be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but at the same time, we have a lot to be mispallah that he shouldn't allow Eretz Yisrael to be controlled by the secular people. That he should continue the process of the Geula, and we should see the building of the Beis Hamikdash and Mashiach should come.